everyone, and welcome to episode 93 of season 11 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again this season is one of my favorite guests, Heather Baxendale of Word of Hellmouth. Welcome back, Heather.
Hello, Rob. Thank you for having me back.
Yes, always fun having you on the show. We always find what to talk about, you know, and over the next 3 days, we'll find what to do. I have faith in both of us.
We never run out of things to talk about, as happened before the show. We like did a whole episode before the episode.
Just to let everyone behind the scenes, we talked for 45 minutes before we started recording. So hopefully neither of our staff is looking.
We had to catch up.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. So episode 93 begins with Spears leading the way and ends with Lipton giving us an update. So let's start with you know what? Let's wait till Friday to ask you your history of Band of Brothers. Why not? You know, we'll keep that. We'll keep everyone wondering what's Heather's background with Band of Brothers. Why not? Why not? So
good. I love a mystery. I'm anything but mysterious, so I love this.
Well, that's good. That's good. I like mysteries too. We've had some mysteries in the past. A few, just a few weeks ago, we had a mystery of one of our guests, and it panned out. You know, enough people were surprised at the at the shock of things. But that's good. Yeah. Okay. So. We ended things yesterday with Spears being given orders by Winters to take over for Dyke, and he just runs into the maelstrom and just takes control right away, and he starts giving orders all over the place, and you know the Germans are shooting at them, and he and Lipton are pinned behind a wall, and you know we see the Germans shooting at them, and Spears goes Lipton, and Lipton looks at him, and then we see Luz on the radio going street fight item easy six over, and you know we see that there's like a ricochet that hits Lipton in the face. Now I like the fact that item is I Company, right? It's, at the time, it was known as Item Company, right? And that their nickname that their code name on the radio is Street Fight. You know that Luz is trying to get in touch with them, and Easy Six and Street Fight Item, you know that type of thing, because they're trying to get in touch with them and they're not able to. Lipton, obviously smarts from the ricochet. And then Spears says to him, what do you see, Lipton? And he goes, armor and infantry. A lot of infantry. Spears says, I Company should be on the other side of the town. You see any sign of them? And then he turns to Luz and goes, radio anything? And he goes, no, sir. I think they're going to be pulling back. And then Lipton says, if we don't connect with I, they'll slip away. Spears goes, all right, wait here.
That guy, he's like the most out of everyone. He is this most superhuman of them all.
That's right. And Luz continues on the radio. Item, easy six. And they just look at the fact that Spears just gets up and just starts running towards the Germans. You know, we've seen Spears a few times before, and we've seen some of the stuff that he's done or said or whatever, but nothing this crazy as what he's doing.
No, there's like a myth, like I think at the beginning of this part too, they kind of talk about him, like the mythos of him.
Yes.
Him cigarettes. Okay. Oh, is that's next episode, isn't
that's
it?
That's tomorrow, right. Tomorrow we'll talk more about
Yeah. That. My bad, I'm getting ahead of things. I thought I was getting behind. Okay. Yep. The mythos of Spears. Tomorrow.
That's right.
Tomorrow's episode, everyone.
Yeah. And Lipton just turns to Luz and goes, what the hell? And we see that Spears just takes off and starts running towards where the Germans are. the German position, and Lipton just gives him cover, and the Germans start running away. They come off their tank half track or whatever, and then you see like the mist as these guys are running. You see that through the mist, Spears just comes through, and he's shooting at them as he's running through them. He basically ran through the German lines in order
Yes.
to try to get to where he needed to get to. And then we can see that the Germans are like shocked that he's right there. And then we get Lipton's narration, and he goes, "At first, the Germans didn't shoot at him. I think they couldn't quite believe what they were seeing, but that wasn't the really astounding thing." And we see that he's running, and he finally reaches the other side, jumps over the wall, and we see that Spears is out of sight for a few seconds, and then we see come back. And as he's coming back, that's right. As he's coming back, that's when we hear Lipton say the astounding thing was that after he hooked up with Eye Company, he came back. And we see him again sprinting back through the German lines, which again, this is such an amazing story that Spears did this because I mean he really did do this. That's what it
Yes.
comes down to. And I love the way that they focus in on Donnie Wahlberg's eyes as he's telling this story. Just showing us how much he appreciates also everything that's going on here.
Well, they were getting mowed down. It felt like of the many hopeless moments you felt and the moments of devastation, particularly in this part. I think this scene and this like little bubble here was one of the ones that felt the most hopeless, especially after Dyke, did exactly as we knew he was going to do and he was going to fail them. This was like this one like beacon of hope and moment. So when it panned back to Lipton, and I mean that's what I was feeling too, was that relief and that awe and shock and also just gratitude that there was someone that crazy and brave to do that.
Correct. 100%. And again, this is just amazing to see to the way that they film this, just showing us that the way he just ran in one direction and then runs right back in the other direction.
I almost lost my crap. I've watched it before, but it's been 20 years and I didn't remember like all the details and these moments. I was literally sick to my stomach with fear. We watched so many people die from ricochets, from small things, from their own guns. We've seen so many awful and just like pointless or random death that to have this one moment that should not exist, I don't know. It was one of the highlights of the entire series for me.
Okay, 100%. It just makes total sense.
Yeah, there's no way he should have lived. None. There's no way he should have survived that. Just none.
I mean, so the book describes the this what happened here. So this is on page 172 of the book, and Sergeant Lipton and the others filled him in. He barked out orders, second platoon this way, third platoon that way. Get those mortars up and all out with those machine guns. Let's go. And he took off, not looking back, depending on the men to follow. They did. I remember the broad open fields outside Foy, Spears wrote in a 1991 letter, where any movement brought fire. A German 88 artillery piece was fired at me when I crossed the open area alone. That impressed me. Standing at the site in 1991 with Winters and Malarkey, Lipton remembered Spears' dash. He also recalled that when they got to the outbuildings of Foy, Spears wanted to know where Eye Company was, but he just kept on running right through the German line, came out on the other side, conferred with Eye Company CO, and ran back. Damn, that was impressive. And again, it just that's all they talk about. That's all they say there. And
Yeah.
just that little paragraph, the way that it's expanded here is just great. And so I really like the way that they put that together, and explain basically what Spears did, and nobody's 100% sure why Spears acted this way, but the bottom line is he's just because he was a great commander. He knew
Yes.
that that in order to do things for his men, this is what he needed to do.
Well, and I think that's what we see is, and it particularly in this moment, Dyke completely crumbles and he's not willing to do anything for his men because he doesn't see them as equals. Winter's in the back over there wanting to come up and help his men. He doesn't want to see them die. He wants to get out there and they're like, "No, you need to stay back here in command." Like everyone wants to go help each other and the willingness to sacrifice for each other, but what's most interesting, I think, about particularly World War II and situations like this, and I think what Band of Brothers does so well, is it shows us the difference of personalities and people. There were so many men there that were drafted that didn't choose to be there. These are not all soldiers that signed up to be here and serve. Many of these men had no choice in the matter but to be there and serve. So you don't just
Well,
have people.
again, the men in Easy Company were because they all volunteered.
Easy, that's true. Easy company, true. But I mean, overall, this is one of the things that we see and we look at. But still, even if you sign up for it, some people may find that this is maybe not what they thought it would be once they're actually in the crap, like we saw with David Schwimmer in the first couple episodes.
Exactly.
He taught these guys how to be what they needed to be and do what they needed to do. But once it came to actually being in the field, he had no gut for it. And does that make him a lesser man? No, it just makes him built different. So, and I'd say the same thing about Spear here. Like, if there was a man who was willing to go out and sacrifice and put himself on the line for the rest of his people, for his brothers, it was him. And that's why they all love him for it. And he seems superhuman because of it. I don't know. I think it's incredible to watch and see what they were willing to do for each other after they'd been through so much together.
I remember when I watched this the first time, I was watching it with a whole group of friends. Like every Sunday night, we were getting together and we were sitting and watching it all together. And one of them knew the story. And when this scene happens, he said, "Look, Easy's has finally got their new commander. That type of thing." And you just watch it and you see that that's what they've been looking for. Ever since they lost Winters, and again, we'll talk a little bit more about that tomorrow. They needed somebody who could care for them as well as Winters cared for them, and they found that in Spears.
Because Winters is the one who was the heart of them and held them all together up to that point, too. And only did they start to crumble when he was no longer their commanding officer.
And we
So,
saw that yesterday where he was running forward. And Sink had to stop him, and see, and
which
then,
is a great moment.
yeah, and obviously we talked about that yesterday, but again, the idea that he thought on the spot to say, okay, you know what, I'm just going to send Spears in. Spears, go take over. You're the guy who's going to do this. Again, we talked about it yesterday, but the question is was it a decision that he had thought of, or was it because he just saw Spears right there? And said, okay, just I'm gonna send this guy in because he's right here. That type of thing.
I don't know. Spears is also crazy and he's proved to do crazy things, but he's also at the same time been totally reliable. And the men respected him.
Right. And
So maybe a little, but maybe a little of both. He was there and he was also the right guy.
right, that's true. And I mean, it's great because as we're watching Spears run back and forth, first of all, we get more of the amazing Michael Kamen music for the show. It's unbelievable, and we see that Lipton starts smiling as we hear this narration from him, because Lipton himself was looking for somebody to be to be the anchor for them, to be the leader, and then the shot changes and we see a whole bunch of guys sitting around singing a song called "I've Been Working on the Railroad."
That was abrupt. It was so abrupt to go from so much tension and so much
Exactly.
build up there to that moment of brevity and like levity together.
Nothing.
I'm like, did I imagine this? Am I hallucinating right now? It was a quick switch up, but it was
Yes,
necessary.
that is very true. And so, what do you know about the song "Working on the Railroad"?
I know that I sang it as a kid.
Okay. You have any idea?
That's it. That's
Okay,
a.
you have any guess as to how old that song is?
I'm guessing a lot older than I thought it was before you just asked me. I don't know. Let's say from the 1800s.
Okay, I'll give you that. It's 1894. So it's pretty good.
That's
Very good.
yeah.
Right. So the song started being used. It's actually also based. The part of the tune is from a cello solo from Franz von Suppe. He wrote an overture called Poet and Peasant Overture in 1846. So the tune is very similar, and it was originally called the Levee Song, Leveee, and it was a book. In a book put out by Princeton University, where they were publishing, they had a whole bunch of songs in it in 1894. And the earliest known recording of
Wow.
it, if it was from 1923, by the Shannon Quartet, who sung the song "I've Been Working on the Railroad."
Yeah.
And I mean, again, the guys sing part of it here, but I'll quickly go through the lyrics. I've been working on the railroad all the livelong day. I've been working on the railroad just to pass the time away. Can't you hear the whistle blowing? Rise up so early in the morning. Can't you hear the captain shouting? Dinah, blow your horn. Dinah, won't you blow? Dinah, won't you blow? Dinah, won't you blow your horn? Dinah, won't you blow? Dinah, won't you blow? Dinah, won't you blow your horn? Someone's in the kitchen with Dinah. Someone's in the kitchen, I know. Someone's in the kitchen with Dinah, strumming on the old banjo. Singing fee-fi fiddly-o, fee-fi fiddly-i-o. Fee-fi fiddly-i-o, strumming on the old banjo. That's basically the song. It was also known as a song that was used when men were actually building railroads.
I mean, if I had to guess, that's what I would have assumed, but it was taught like a
Yes,
nursery rhyme when
exactly.
we were
Well,
kids.
because
And it's still
at
an
that point,
earworm.
they weren't teaching songs about laborers building levees and railroads in the 1800s,
No. Why do you think that's what they were singing here?
why do I think this was? No, I mean that's the research I did. Why do you think that? You mean why did the
No,
soldiers sing it? I have no
that's
idea. Absolutely no. No clue.
I was curious why that was a song. That also, like I said, I felt like I had slipped into a fever dream after all of that
Exactly.
horror and all that tension to this moment, which was great, but it's certainly like, what is happening? What is happening? Did I mess something up? No,
True.
that was
Now,
it. Oh, I'm very curious
do you
now.
know who
I
Dinah
wonder
was? Or who are they referring to as Dinah
No.
in the song? So Dinah is
No.
actually the name of the train.
Oh.
The idea is that Dinah is
Okay.
the name of the train, or it could be a reference to the cook in the kitchen. Which again makes absolutely no sense when it comes to Band of Brothers, why they would be singing the song.
Nope, that was I'm actually kind of happy that there's something that you don't
There are a lot of
actually
things
know,
I
but
don't
this
know.
was
There
one
are
of
a
the
lot of
things
things
I
I don't
wanted to
know.
ask you. You know a lot though, and it's impressive. So my hat's
Okay,
off
but
to
again,
you.
if the information isn't there's nothing I can really do about
No,
that.
no.
There are other versions of different verses and stanzas. There's a whole one that's someone's making love to Dinah. Someone's making love, I know. Someone's making love to Dinah because I
Well, they didn't teach us that
no,
as
because I can't
children.
hear the
Think
old
that.
banjo.
Goodness.
I've been working on the trestle, driving spikes that grip.
It's
Maybe
about the cook then.
I've been working on the train. Yeah, I hope it's not the train. I've been working on the trestle to be
Maybe.
sure that the ties won't slip. Can't you hear the engine coming? Run to the stanchion of the bridge. Can't you see the big black smokestack coming down the ridge? So yeah. And in 1904, the University of Texas at Austin and University of Texas at El Paso created spirit songs called the Eyes of Texas. And it's set to the same tune. So the
Oh.
lyrics are there. I'm working. Okay, so the eyes of Texas are upon you all the livelong day. The eyes of Texas are upon you. You can't get away. Do not think you can escape them from night till early in the morning. The eyes of Texas are upon you till Gabriel blows his horn. I don't really understand why they would it's pretty much plagiarizing the entire thing, but whatever. It's a spirit song, right? Or,
Yeah.
what can I tell you?
Oh, that's pretty funny.
And so we see on the screen also that there were we saw this a few weeks ago, I believe, that there was like a director that was filming stuff. And here he is, he's back filming stuff here. And we
Yeah.
can actually also see the clipboard first. And the clipboard says the 166 Signal Photo Company, DET, A Lieutenant, and then it says Jones. So I don't know what that maybe detachment A Lieutenant Jones, subject 88 gun, location Foy, and then it says photographer Sergeant Hausman, roll number 6, date the 11th of January 45. So I always love seeing things like this because January 11th is my birthday. I was not born in 1945. I was only born 29 years later, but still, it's interesting to see. Exactly. So
Happy
something it's
belated
interesting to
birthday.
see something that happened, on my birthday. The thing the most amazing thing that in movies that happened on my birthday is Large Marge died in the big accident in Pee-wee's Big Adventure on the actual day I was born, on January 11th, 1934.
Gosh, that's great.
Well,
It's
I
even
only
better
know
that
this
you
because
know
of a
that.
friend of the show, Sean
It's
German,
so
who
specific.
brought it up. So, it did no, that's where that came from. But I still remember it. I'm not the biggest fan of that movie, but I
That's
like
great.
that little trivia tidbit that's obviously related directly to me. So there you go. Right. So
Yes.
we see that this director is filming something, and he's filming the guys singing the song. They're all sitting on a tank, and we see a whole bunch of them sitting around there. We even see some friends of the show on there, especially we can see Alex Saber Brady, who played Mellet. So he's there.
Yep.
And the camera guy's filming them, and then the camera shot changes, and it pans down from a big church steeple, and we once again get Lipton's narration where he says, "We took over 100 German prisoners. After that, it was mostly clean up." And you see, he's Lipton's hurting the guy, the prisoners. He says, "Let's go, move it, take him down to the barn." And we see one of the soldiers push a prisoner down onto the ground and go, "Sit down." And then you hear a gunshot ring out. You see that one of the guys get shot, and then someone screams, "Sniper!" And at that point, we do get to see friend of the show Alex get shot in the head. And he did talk about this in his interview a few weeks ago, that this was something that was going to be happening, and now we actually get to see that happen to him. To his character, obviously. And then Lipton screams, "Take cover, take cover, come on, come on." And then he's there with Shifty, and Shifty goes, "Where is he?" And the two of them are trying, they're on the edge of the building trying to figure out where the sniper is coming from that's shooting at them. And he goes, "I can't see him." And then Lipton gives another quick look, and he goes, "Second floor, building on the right." And he goes, "Don't miss Shifty." And then what he decides to do is he just goes to draw fire. I mean, we saw just before, that's right, before
Big hero moment.
when we saw that the Mellet was killed, we saw another few guys get hit also at the same time. This sniper was really doing some damage there. And lifting.
This is exactly what I mean though when I say seeing Spears do it, he did it, how it felt even more like insane and impossible is because this is exactly what happens. They have a moment where you think everybody's safe and everything's okay, and they're never safe. That's the truth of them being where they are. And if there's anything that I took away from watching this was moments like this where, well, it seems like everything's okay here and safe here again, but it never is wherever they are. And again, sometimes it's by their own weapon and an accident, and sometimes it's just crazy things that happen, but there's never a sense of
That's
anyone
right.
feeling
Which
safe
then makes you wonder
in this
why they're
series
sitting and
whatsoever.
singing, "I've been working on the railroad."
Like, and it still caught me off guard, even though I was untrusting. But yeah, it's and then again, you see this beautiful moment of willingness to sacrifice. Lipton's great too, and after 20 years of not seeing Donnie Wahlberg in any other prevalent roles, or intentionally watching anything with him, I know that he was on Blue Bloods for a while. I was very, very impressed with his performances throughout
He
this
was
entire
for
series. He
sure.
was wonderful.
And he basically he does what Tom Hanks did in Saving Private Ryan. He draws the fire of the sniper to a different position in order to give his own sniper the opportunity to take out the other sniper there. And he just and I like the fact also that the ricochet that he had gotten earlier, that bloodied his face a little bit. It's still bloody. He hasn't tried to wipe it off. It's still there.
Still
He
there.
just runs and hopes that his zigzagging will keep him alive long enough for Shifty to try to take care of something. And Shifty, that's right,
Serpentine,
very good, the
serpentine.
in-laws. Shifty is able to take out this German sniper, which is one shot. And it's great. I really like the way that they do that. And we see that Lipton is just lying against the building completely out of breath. Or realizing, that's right,
It's
realizing
been a
how
day.
stupid the move that he just made, but it makes sense. And then the shot changes, and we see Lipton just walking through this town, taking in everything that's going on. You see a bunch of wounded guys all around. You see, wood in the background that's going to be used to burn fire somewhere. You see like a wagon, just showing that this is a pretty small town. And then we see that he sees one of the dead on the ground. He just looks at him. And at this point, we're back to hearing his narration, and he goes, "Mellet, Heron, Sawasco, and Ken Webb were killed by a sniper. There would have been more if it hadn't been for Shifty Powers."
Yeah, it would have been more if it wasn't for Lipton
That's
and
right.
Shifty.
But again, that we'll talk about that more tomorrow, but that's why Lipton thinks it's only Shifty. And
Oh, I
yeah.
love these guys.
And then he's continuing to walk around, and he sees some guys that he recognizes. He sees Bull walking, carrying Percante on his back. And
I love those two. I love those two.
and then he says, "You hit bad, Percante? Percante?" And Percante looks at him and goes, "Beautiful wound, Lip. They shot me right through my ass. 'Cause you hang tough." And then Percante.
Many of them have gotten shrapnel
That's
shot
right.
in the ass. Like, they've all got the Forrest Gump
Seriously,
injury.
seriously.
I mean, it does make sense when you think about it. It does that it doesn't that it happened that often, but it's it it's at least one little piece of humor that
That
you
is
can
very true.
indulge in.
That is very true. And he goes, "You hang tough." And he goes, "Hey, Sarge." He goes, "Yeah. Is it true about Dyke?" And he goes, "Yeah." And Perconte goes, "Thank God for small mercies, huh?" He goes, "Yeah." And they make us try and think about what it is that they're talking about with Dyke here. You don't know if it means something happened to him, or something physically happened to him, or possibly something else. We're gonna have to shortly wait to figure that one out. But it's nice the way that they, first of all, they show us that Frank's okay, and again, Bull is there to carry him. Just like they carried Compton after he got shot in the ass. Same type of thing. It's part of their camaraderie that they have. And then as we see Lipton walking away, you see parts of the town just like burning in the background. A lot of smoke of stuff that's going on, which is pretty amazing to see.
It's just, yeah, it's amazing because they're constantly in these situations that are not normal, and it's gotten to the point where it's normalized for them. Hence, like them singing together at a time where clearly it still wasn't 100% safe. And even this shot right here, which I think is gorgeous and bleak, and especially with the color contrast of all the white and gray of winter and the cold, and to see the fire and the smoke in the
Exactly.
background, it's haunting.
It's true. And then we get more narration from Lipton, and he goes, "We've been looking down at the front of Foy for the better part of a month, knowing that's where we had to go. It was a great relief to have done it. I guess a lot of the men thought once we'd taken Foy, they'd get us off the line, ship us back to Mormelon for a breather, but that wasn't to be. 2 days later, we took Noville, and after that, Rochamps." So, I mean, it's great how they truncate this, and we don't have to see all of these various battles that they're going through. But he just has to say it, and that's it. So this way we know that these guys, they've gone through something really, really bad, but it's not over yet.
It's never over. That's okay. So I think that's one of the, and I think this episode in particular is really, really hits on it the most. I think this is where we see their fatigue, their battle fatigue, everything at its most maximum, particularly in combat situations. So showing the results of this one, and like you said, adding on, yes, there was another one, there was another one. Yeah, we don't need to see those. We saw it here, and we saw what the devastation of what they went through and all of the loss that they had in this particular place. And then to just say almost haphazardly, like you noted afterwards, oh yeah, and they just went on, because that's what they do. They go through this, there's no time to process the trauma, there's no time to process all of the loss of their brothers, of their friends. They just have to keep going. And that's what they do. But you see the weight of it in each part, and how each of the characters has changed from that first part to where they are now. And it's leaps, like it's impossible not to feel like you've been through the gauntlet with them just by bearing witness and observing. It's powerful shit, man.
Yeah, it really is. There's no question about that. Now, what's really interesting is if you look in the book, so they do have some interesting anecdotes about things that happened in Noville and Rochamps. So I just want to just quickly read some of them, just a few of them, not too many, because I understand why they're cut out. You can't have everything in here. But there are some pretty interesting stories here. During the attack on Noville, so it says Lipton was uneasy about leading second platoon on an attack without knowing what was up ahead. So he decided to go forward with a radio man to scout the situation in Noville. Two men came into a barn on the outskirts of the village, entered it by a door in the back, and felt their way through to a door that opened into a courtyard near the main road through Noville. Everything was quiet. Lipton called Spears on the radio to tell the CO where he was and to request permission to scout the town. He said he could see some Sherman tanks up ahead and asked if Spears knew if American armor had already taken the town. Spears did not know and told Lipton to look around. Lipton moved slightly forward to the tanks. They were knocked out. American bodies lay frozen and strewn all around. They had been left there when Team DeSabre, had withdrawn from Noble on December 20th. This is January 11th, obviously, or January, a few days later, just January, about a month earlier. The Germans were still in the town. Lipton and his radio man withdrew. The attack jumped off at dawn, January 15th. There was resistance strongest on the right-hand side of the road against 3rd Platoon. The 2nd Platoon quickly got into the center of Noble and up to the burned-out Shermans. The 3rd Platoon got into the burned-out building and set up a CP. Over the radio came a message, "Friendly armor on the right." As Lieutenant Shames and Sergeant Alley got that message, they heard tanks outside the building. Anxious to get the show on the road, Alley told Shames he was going to link up with those tanks. Shames decided to join him. They moved by several burned-out buildings and rounded a corner into the main road. Up ahead, between two buildings, partway out was the tank they sought. Alley moved up to the side of the tank. Tank commander was standing in the turret, looking the other way. So Alley shouted to him over the roar of the engine to come this way. The tank commander turned, and Alley realized he had mistaken a German tank for an American. The German swore, dropped into his tank, and began traversing his turret towards Alley and Shames. They did not. They said not a word to each other. They took off so fast they were kicking snow in the German's face. The tank followed. The Americans ran around the corner. Shames saw an open window and dived in head first. Alley ran 3 meters or so past him and jumped into a doorway with his rifle ready for the infantry he was sure would be in the German tank. The tank turned the corner and drove past Shames and Alley. It came to the place where I Platoon was clearing out buildings near the burned out Shermans. Lipton and his men dived under the Shermans and ducked behind walls for protection. The German tank stopped and swiveled his turret, put a shell into each of the knocked out Shermans to prevent anyone from using their guns to put a shell into his tank as he drove past. Lipton recalled, "When those shells hit the Shermans, it felt to us under them that they had jumped a foot in the air." The tank roared out of town, heading north towards safety. A P-47 fighter plane spotted it, strafed it, and dropped a bomb on it, destroying the tank. Alley went to look for Shames. He heard moaning and cries for help. When he got to the window Shames had dived through, he looked and burst into laughter. He saw his lieutenant tangled up in bedsteads, springs, and furniture in a basement Shames had not realized was there. So, yeah, that's a fun little story about something that happened there.
It's
Yeah.
crazy.
Now, when they got to Rochamps, so they, okay, Sergeant Earl Hale was one of the first into Rochamps. He and Leib got ducked into a barn where they surprised and made prisoner 6 SS officers. Hale lined them up nose to nose and told them that if he and Leib got killed, they were going to take the Germans with them. Hale covered them with his Tommy gun to make the point. A shell exploded outside. Hale was standing by the door. He got hit by a piece of the shrapnel and went down. An SS officer pulled his knife from his boot and slashed Hale's throat. He failed to cut an artery or sever the windpipe, but did cut the esophagus. Blood gushed out. Liebgott shot the officer who did the cutting, then the others. Medic Rowe got sulfur powder on Hale's wound. A jeep evacuated him to Luxembourg, where an amazed doctor patched him up, leaving a crooked esophagus. Because of Hale's condition, the doctor gave him a medical order stating that he did not have to wear a necktie. Later, Hale was stopped by an irate General Patton, who chewed him out for not wearing his necktie. Hale triumphantly produced his slip of paper, leaving Patton, for once, speechless.
That's an achievement in and of itself. Wow.
That's right. But again, they're fun
Oh, man.
stories. I understand why they skip them. You don't really need to have things like this. They're small little things,
Yeah.
but I mean that's one of the advantages of also reading the book, besides watching the miniseries to see the different things.
I think one of the things I those little stories are cool, but I think one of the things that we and in one of those little stories that you can actually see and understand a little bit more is I think World War II is probably one of the most, if not the most, highest body counts of friendly fire. And I think that sometimes, particularly with modern society now, people kind of lose sight of what it actually looks like to be in war. People see movies and video games and stuff all the time. And I think what Band of Brothers does uniquely, and Saving Private Ryan is another one that does it very well, Black Hawk Down does it very well, is it shows the actual chaos. And you can't always see or understand what you're looking at when it's happening. So if you can't imagine what they're seeing in the moment, it makes total and utter sense how there would be friendly fire regularly. Confusing a Sherman with a German tank, or the German tank for a Sherman, stuff like that. It's not like tanks are really small. But there's so much chaos going on, it's 100% understandable. And I don't think, unless maybe you either really look into that or watch something like this, I don't think that there's really a way for us as civilians who haven't experienced it to grasp it at all.
Correct, 100%. And I think that's part of the idea of having this type of series, in order for us to get that idea, to get as close to it as possible, for people that have never that haven't experienced that, to try to get an idea of what type of stuff these guys had to go through. And then the shot changes, and we're now in a church, and we see a bunch of young girls singing, choir singing, and Lipton continues his narration. "We spent our night in Rochamps in a convent. It was the first time we'd spent a night indoors in a month. The sisters there brought in their choir to sing for us. It was heaven. The mood of the men was relaxed. We were finally being relieved and would soon be in Mormolin. Of course, in the morning we found out Mormolin would have to wait." And that's where things stop at this 5 minute for this 5 minute section. Is there anything else you wanted to add about this 5 minute segment, Heather?
No, I think we kind of covered it. We're very close to the end now, and I felt emotionally battle weary at this point. And to end particularly this moment here with this moment of brief solace. This was the first time in this particular part seven, where I felt like I could breathe, and I think that was the intention after being through all of that. But this was out of all 10 parts, this one was I think the hardest for me to watch.
I think Graham Yost would be very happy to hear that. It means it did work well.
Yes, absolutely brilliant.
So I've said this numerous times. I can't choose my favorite among them because I love them all so much. I love it as a whole. So I can't break it down and say I like this one better than that one and things like that. For me, it's more difficult,
No.
but that's me.
It's one whole piece and story. And like I said, I don't think that this particular part would have had the same impact on it if we hadn't been through everything we did before. It's the collective weariness.
Yes.
And as far as empathizing with what you're watching is going, which like we discussed earlier, there's certainly a level of fatigue that you feel, especially if you're watching it. Like when it was released, it came out, I think, it came out and you get to see episode per week, right? Is that,
No,
am
there
I
were two
remembering
two
that right?
episodes a week. Two episodes a week.
2 episodes a week. Okay. So I when I did my rewatch this week, I did 2 or 3 episodes every day, and I couldn't do any more. I emotionally couldn't do any more than 2 or 3, and I sometimes had to take breaks in between because it's so heavy, and it should be. So well done.
Right. There have been times in the past where I have watched this all of it within a 24-hour period.
Oh my goodness. My brother does it once a year. And sometimes he binges it in like a day or two, and sometimes he watches it over a longer period of time. But that's got to be hard to do. I applaud you guys.
Exactly. All right, so now we will do today's segment, which is Band Brand, where my guest will give their top five fictional movie bands. Heather, why don't you start with your
Oh
number five
yeah.
and work
Okay.
your way up?
All right. Number five. I have Crucial Taunt from Wayne's World. That's my fun one. For number four, I have Marvin Berry and the Starlighters from Back to the Future, which I just watched for the first time in forever, showing my 9-year-old. I had to explain to him that
Oh,
being a
in
peeping
forever.
Tom was bad.
Okay, in forever, not meaning the first time. So that's good.
No, it's probably been
You
about
got
10
me
years since I've.
concerned. You got me concerned.
No, I've watched Back to the Future so many times that I can play it on repeat in my own head.
Exactly. I'm very familiar with that.
Childhood staple. Yes, I know you're a big fan too. So, number three is The Commitments from The Commitments. Number two If anybody has this list and doesn't have the Blues Brothers, we're gonna fight.
There are a few people that don't have the Blues Brothers on there, but
I'm sure, and I will fight you if you want to. And number one is my personal favorite, is Stillwater from Almost Famous.
all right,
I
excellent.
love that movie. I love that movie.
I like it a lot. I really do like the movie, but I think it's a little bit too long for its own good.
Maybe it's been a while since I've seen it. It's been a while since I've seen it. When I was thinking about this list, I'm like, I have to go back and
Yeah,
listen
no,
to it or watch it.
I gotta rewatch it also.
Yeah.
Same thing. All right. And now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie.
Oh,
So I
here we go.
will spin the wheel, and we're gonna see what Heather gets. So round and round and round the wheel goes. What I'm basically gonna do here is I'm gonna give you a little bit of a synopsis, and you have to kind of guess what movie it is that we're talking about.
There's so many World War II movies.
Yes, there are. Isn't that the
He
point?
says
If
this in
there
his
weren't
maniacally confident way. For those of you who haven't heard me on this show before, I do notoriously bad at these kinds of games, even
Okay.
if I know the answer.
Okay, this is a 1968 movie starring Richard Burton and Clint Eastwood. Okay, about Allied soldiers who plan a raid on a castle where
Kelly's Heroes?
where the Nazis are
Yeah.
holding an American brigadier general prisoner. It was written by
And this
Alistair
is, you said,
MacLean. MacLean.
you said 60s or
68,
70s?
1968.
The Dirty Dozen?
No. No.
Look, I'm just going to start spewing
I
them
mean,
now.
you're close from the year because Dirty doesn't come in 67. So you're only a year off.
Okay, I knew that was in the 60s. That's why I came to it. Who was in it
Clint
again?
Eastwood and Richard Burton.
Okay, now I should know this.
Richard Burton is
I
Mr.
should know
Elizabeth
this.
Taylor. I don't know if it's added.
I know Richard. Yes, I
Oh.
know who Richard Burton is. I'm just I'm trying to think of I think I know what it is, and I can't think of the freaking name. It's not Sands of Iwo
No, that's for you,
Jima.
man.
Yeah, see, I'm just names. What? I'm trying to think timeline. 60s. The Longest Day.
62.
It's not Patton.
What would it be?
It's not A Bridge Too Far.
76.
That's the 70.
77. 77.
I'm not gonna get this. I'm not gonna get this, and I'm gonna be really pissed off.
It has the name of a type of bird in its title.
I can't think of it. I can't think of it. I'm
Okay,
brain
Where
farting.
Eagles Dare.
God damn it! Okay, I'm not super angry at myself for not getting that. I don't think I've
There
ever seen the
you
whole
go.
thing.
That's a good excuse.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen the whole thing. But that was one that my dad would watch sometimes. But only if it was on TV. That wasn't when he went and searched on his own. Okay,
Okay.
I'm not as mad. Not as
Pretty
mad at myself.
good.
But I know the name. Like I the couple of them I haven't seen. Like I've never seen The Longest Day. I'm just trying to think of ones that I
You
know of
should.
that are
You
in the right
should.
timeline. Okay. I'd rather get
That's true.
something than nothing,
That's very true.
even if it's wrong.
All right. So, Heather, would you like to tell people where they can find Heather Baxendale?
Yes, you can find me at my website, heatherbaxendale.com. I have all the podcasts that I'm on that I visit, the one that I host, Word of Hellmouth, which is a Buffy rewatch show that I do with my very good friend Mark Armstead. We are currently in season 4. We're about halfway through. Right now, we have switched to doing both Buffy and season 1 of Angel. We are running them tandem next to each other because there is crossover and the universes do collide from time to time. And we're having a real good time. We usually take a little break during the summer, but I think that we're just going to continue on this year. So if you're into Buffy, check it out. And if you're into Reading. I like to write fun science fiction, fantasy, action, adventure stories, and you can check those out on my website as well, along with all my socials.
All right, very cool. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieroundminute@movieround.net. So thank you very much for joining me again today, Heather. And Heather and I will be back tomorrow for yet another episode. But until then, Kurihi!
Kurihi!